There were moving boxes set up in a diamond around the empty living room. Blankets and pillows was first base. Kitchen stuff was second. Books third. A heavy cardboard china box was home plate because it had dishes in it. Dishes and plates. Zach checked the signals from the catcher, shook his head. No way was he throwing a slider. Not with two outs in the bottom of the ninth, a full count, and imaginary men on first, second, and third. The bases were loaded. "It all comes down to this one pitch," Zach said, narrating the scene. "He looks to the dugout." Zach glanced over at the stuffed animals lined up along the baseboard. He looked to his coach, and the grizzled bear gave him the signal. "Throw whatever you think is best, kid." Zach nodded. He understood. The old ball coach was giving him the game. It was Zach's to win or lose. He pushed his eyeglasses up his nose. Some players laughed at any pitcher who wore his spectacles out on the mound. That is, they laughed until they saw Zach hurl his famous firebomb fandango fastball. Then they realized that the glasses were what gave Zach Jennings his supersonic vision, enabling him to place pitches precisely over that portion of the plate where no batter could possibly hit them. Zach squeezed the spongy ball in his right fist. He glanced toward third, making sure the imaginary man wasn't taking too much of a lead. He raised his left leg. "Here's the windup and the pitch. He's going with the fastball." Zach shifted into super slow-mo and added sound effects. The zoom of the ball leaving his hand. 50,000 fans rising to their feet. The jet stream of his fastball streaking past the baffled batter. "Strike three," Zach the umpire yelled. "You're out of here." Zach did a funky potato masher dance while his imaginary teammates stormed out of the dugout to mob him. He dropped to his knees, flopped sideways on the floor, and started spinning around in kicking circles. "Zach Jennings wins the World Series! He wins the World Series!" "Stop that." Zach froze. His eyes darted around the empty room. "Mom?" He thought he heard her, knew it was impossible. "Mom?" Zach stood, brushed off his pants, backed away from the archway where the living room connected to the dining room. He turned and faced a bay window. He looked across the street, the brownstone on the other side of West 84th Street. She was over there waiting for him, right above the front door, the monster with the sunken stone eyes. "Wherever you go, whatever you do, I'll know," his mother had always told him. "I have eyes everywhere." A gargoyle. Logically, rationally, Zach knew that's all the monster across the street was. It wasn't alive, and it certainly couldn't see. It was a figment of some stone carver's wild imagination. This one depicted a sad-faced lady with hair that grew into a thorny tangle of branches and leaves, what they called a green lady, half human, half tree. Her wide-open eyes were, in reality, deep holes bored with a mason's drill. But the irrational part of Zach's brain told him that the stone lady had seen him rolling around on the floor in his wedding clothes. She knew Zach had ruined another day for everybody else because he was so silly, so selfish. And the stone lady always reported everything to his mother. "Mom?" Zach and his dad had a big apartment for New York. 3 bedrooms, a living room, a kitchen, and a dining room. 2.5 baths. The dining room was the only room in the whole apartment that terrified Zach. The room right in front of him.
"From the living room, you step into the dining room, also known as the dying room."
It was empty. No boxes, no furniture. Nothing but the same stale smell. 12 wet ashtrays leaching out of the walls. Zach felt his heart race, felt it try to jump out of his chest and gallop down the hall so it could hide underneath his bed and tremble in the darkness. But there was no bed in the bedroom anymore. The moving men had broken it down and wrapped the frame pieces together with strapping tape so they could haul it up to Connecticut. Zach's heart would have to stay with him and face whatever was in the dying room.
"Mom," Zach whispered. "I'm sorry, Mom."
His voice rang off walls where nothing remained except the cigarette smoke-stained outlines of picture frames. but sometimes Zack thought he could still see her, sick and swallowed up by the tilting bed, skinny as a skeleton, bald from all the chemotherapy the cancer doctors had given her.
"I didn't even get all that dirty, honest."
"Liar."
"I didn't mean to."
"You're the reason I left. You're why I can't live with your father anymore. You're why I died. I had to leave so I could get away from you."
"I'm sorry, Mom."
The dining room had been empty for over a year. He and his father hardly ever came in here, not since the medical equipment company came and took away the hospital bed and the rolling medicine cabinet and the IV poles and the suction machine and the steel-framed commode chair. Not since the night nurse took all the medicine bottles and flushed the pills and painkillers down the toilet. Not since the night his mother died. "Zack?" His father was standing behind him. "What's up?"
"Nothing."
He placed a hand on Zack's shoulder. "You okay?"
"Yeah, fine."
"You miss her, huh?" Zack knew he needed to choose his words very carefully.
"Yes, Dad. I miss Mom."
"Me too. But, well, we talked about this, remember?"
"Yes, sir."
His father tousled Zack's hair. He had given the correct answer. He'd be back to play again tomorrow. "Where's your tie?" Zack pulled a clip-on bow tie out of his tuxedo jacket. It was purple, his new stepmother's favorite color. "Hey, how'd you get your tux so dirty?" His father swiped some lint off Zack's back. "You don't want to spoil our big day, do you?"
"No, sir."
"Great. Well, I guess we shouldn't keep everybody waiting." His father smiled. Zack pretended to smile back, and the two of them marched out of the apartment. Zack knew his father was excited, eager to start his brand new life. Zack also knew that, given half a chance, he'd probably ruin this one for his dad, too.